Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. Today on the HR Power Hour, we're going to be talking with Lisa Noonan. She is the president of the HRASM, or the Human Resource Association of Southern Maine, here in Portland, Maine. She's going to be talking about why to join the organization, the benefits of it, and the future. Then we're going to be talking with David Leboff. He is the president of Expedicor. Expedicor talks about international. Expedicor is a company that deals with international relocation and global payroll. Two great guests today. So let's talk to Lisa first. Today we're talking with Lisa Noonan. She's the president of the Human Resources Association of Southern Maine, or HRASM, as it's commonly called. Lisa, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
You know, people who are out there may not know exactly what a SHRM chapter is. We have had a guest on from SHRM who has talked about the national SHRM and all the information that's provided by SHRM itself, both to employees and employers. And they mentioned in their discussions about local chapters. But, you know, we're in a local market here. We do broadcast national, but we are in a local market. Tell me a little bit about why, or first, what HRASM is all about.
Well, HRASM was developed back in 1975. And really, it's all about advancing the profession and supporting the members that are in that association. So we're actually one of seven chapters in the state of Maine, and we're affiliated with the National Association, Society for Human Resource Management. And our membership is very diverse. It is diverse from industry, across industries. It's diverse from level of expertise, from the newly a new practitioner to a more seasoned practitioner, as well as diverse membership as to who belongs. We have HR practitioners, we have law firms, financial firms. It's really a very diverse group who comes together to learn more about HR.
Obviously, as a member of the HRASM, which I am, I'm certainly familiar with it. So when somebody joins, and they obviously have to pay dues to be a member, and so what do they get for those dues? What is it that they would go to a meeting, and you know, if I did not know what I know, what would be enticing me to go?
Well, the primary reasons people become members of HRASM is, number one, networking. And as we know today, networking is more important than anything if you want to advance your career or look at different fields for another employment opportunity. The second is really educational opportunities. We have a great lineup of programs that provide a lot of information about HR, ranging from compliance issues to reasons for employing diversity initiatives in your organization. So those are typically the top two reasons. For HRASM, we also offer another big benefit, which is really member appreciation. And we do that through offering scholarships for people to advance their HR knowledge or to pursue HR certification, which is becoming more and more important in positions and organizations. So I would say those are the top three reasons why someone would become a member.
When they're thinking about membership, and maybe there's an owner out there or a president or CEO or a director that says to themselves, geez, why should I as a company think of paying to have somebody to go there? Because obviously it's a choice that either the company might pay or the person or the individual may decide to do and pay that. Why would you say that a company should think about sending a member of their team, whether it's the HR director, the VP, or other members, individual contributors, to these types of organizations? And then the second part of that would be more than one, Should they send two, three? I mean, what's the benefit to that part of it?
I would say the main reason why someone would advocate to become a member or an organization would pay the money for them to become a member is for those exact same reasons I just indicated before, the networking opportunities. You know, a lot of times, and especially in Maine where it's smaller businesses, we're talking about a lone HR practitioner. They don't have the opportunity to discuss the challenges that they may face on a daily or long-term situation with other people in the organization. And so when our members attend these meetings, we do see some sharing of ideas and sharing of challenges. And the benefit to a lot of people is that those seasoned professionals have seen a lot. And so they're able to share their expertise. The other reason is really the educational opportunities. One of our best attended programs is our legal update, which happens every January. And we are covering a range of topics at that meeting, as you know, David, in which it's imperative that businesses are aware of these new laws or regulations so that they don't fall in the crosshairs of the Department of Labor. And then, of course, the third, like I said, the scholarships. The HR certification, and that is the professional in human resources or the senior professional in human resources, that is a body of knowledge that really every HR practitioner should consider for their future development, as well as a real benefit to the organization. And so the membership offers those scholarships for people to pursue those types of certifications.
And so you're really talking about the PHR and the SPHR and the global.
Absolutely.
SPHR. So, I mean, if we're talking about somebody getting this certification, I certainly know as an HR professional that more and more companies are looking for certified professionals, people who have one of their certifications. As a matter of fact, we've had some guests on in the last few weeks to talk about this in depth and also talk about some new programs and courses that are out there for certificates, as well as, you know, other ways to get their education, whether it be master's or bachelor's in HR. So I think all of that is critical for somebody to get their education in the HR community. But experience is invaluable. And I think that's probably, as you said, the key of going to a meeting and hearing from someone who's already dealt with an issue.
Absolutely. You know, a lot of times we have our days planned out and then something happens at the organization that was unexpected. And if you haven't had the opportunity to have to work through that, that can be a very daunting exercise for someone, especially a lone practitioner. So to be able to have those conversations with more seasoned professionals and get a broader scope or a more global viewpoint of sort of the ramifications of whatever those decisions are is extremely helpful.
You talked about programs. Mm-hmm. The organization puts on programs every month, and they meet where and when? What's the date and when does the organization meet?
Well, this year we actually changed locations. We now meet at the Clarion Hotel in Portland. And the meetings are change up every month. One is a breakfast and one is a lunch. So in January, it's typically a luncheon. And then in February, breakfast and so on throughout the year. We do not have meetings in July and August. So we have a summer break.
That's because, of course, all the HR are on the beach during the summer, right?
Let's hope.
That's the place to go. Well, last week on the show, we had Eric Peterson, and he is one of these SHRM trainers that comes up, and he talked a lot about diversity. I actually saw him at the last HRASM program, and I think that he is a great example of the talent that these HRASM meetings present, because you can't get that type of talent all the time out there without having to pay for it and to bring it into your organization with a cost.
Right. And that has been a challenge for this association over the years. I think the difference this year is many moons ago, I was the vice president of programming. And at that time, I thought to myself that if I'm ever in the position of being president, I'm going to make sure that that budget line item is substantial enough to support bringing in other speakers besides local and even regional. And so that's what the board did. We really took somewhat of a new approach, developed a strategic vision for the programming committee, and then provided the financial support for them in order to meet that vision.
Well, as the new president this year, you've had an opportunity to really shape that vision, right, for the next year or two as you take your reign. And by the way, congratulations. I think it's awesome. I know you've been waiting for it in the last few years as you work through the chapter and up in the ranks and so forth. But, I think that what we're really talking about is that's the key to membership, I think, is getting good programs that people want to really see and hear and learn from.
Absolutely.
And we're going to come back to that conversation when we return. You're listening to the HR Power Hour. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com. And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And we're talking with Lisa Noonan. She's the president of HRASM. And we've been talking really about not only what's going on with the organization and why somebody should join, but the programming that has to do with each month's event and how critical that is. So before we left, I'd asked the question, and we had talked a little bit about how critical programming is. So tell me what you're seeing about the future that's critical about it. Tell me why it gets people off their seats, it gets them out of the office to that breakfast or that afternoon show, and tell me what your position is on that.
Well, programming is really the lifeblood of the association. If you don't have good programming, you're not going to have members. And, of course, members' dues pay for all those things that you want to do as an association. So the vision really that the board set forth in that programming was to make sure that it benefited businesses, that HR is seen as a business partner, not as a siloed department, and that our membership understands the impact on the bottom line. So one of the challenges that we see with programming is, and I think everyone, you know, even outside of HR, faces this challenge every day, is why should I go to this program when I have so much work that I have on my desk to do? And so really what's important for us is to make sure that that programming brings an educational benefit to our membership, as well as has a practical application. So we don't want our members to just come and listen to someone. We want them to walk away with one or two takeaways that they can implement in either their tactical or strategical plan for the future. That, to me, is very important, because I can tell you my experience in going to meetings or conferences, I have a level of frustration if I'm not walking out of there without a new piece of information that I can utilize pretty quickly.
Well, I think it's monthly reminders, too. of something you can do differently. I mean, you go to a convention and look, you know, we talk about the main HR convention coming up in a few weeks here. It's a fantastic conference. It's 4 days. Heather and Bud and, you know, at the New England Law Publishers do an amazing job. And you come out of there with an incredible amount of information. It's incredible, the total takeaway. And at the end of the day, you're still going to use only bits and pieces of all that you learn there. Well, this is a monthly hit that can remind you of how to do something a little better or can retool you slightly in a way that helps. And maybe you network with somebody and solve a problem that you hadn't thought of. So that to me really sums up a huge benefit for going to a meeting each month. Even though maybe the topic is something that you go, well, that may not be fully engaging or what my cup of tea is, but you know, I'm going to go anyway, and I'm going to make that happen.
Right. Well, and we see that. You know, that's one of the challenges of programming, is to make sure that we can capture as much of an interest in that diverse audience as we can. We're not going to hit it 100% every month. But to your point, what I'm hopeful is that if someone is there listening to a program and they don't necessarily get something educational or something that they can use immediately, then it may be something they can use down the line, or they've had a conversation with a table mate that is providing them some information that they couldn't get anywhere else.
Sure. Tell me about how the Human Resource Association of Southern Maine is a benefit to the community, to the state of Maine.
One of the things that is very important to the board and is part of really our affiliation with SHRM is that we have certain core leadership areas. And some of those core leadership areas are really charged with developing initiatives that will either benefit the membership or benefit the community at large. We've had a couple of longstanding volunteer opportunities in the community. One is Crossroads for Women, and the other is the Wyndham Correctional, in which we send members who volunteer their own time. It is not paid. They go in to work with these individuals to talk about interviewing skills, really the steps they need to take to get their next employment. So, you know, the association has a much broader impact than just on our members. It really is community.
Well, you know, I think that's critical today as, you know, the next generation keeps moving up and they are so community focused and so community driven that they want to see a give back. Mm-hmm. And I think that SHRM does a lot of give backs. And, you know, here at the local level, that's great. I know those programs have been very successful, and I think that that's key. One of the other things you talked about is scholarships. Talk a little bit about what they are and what they're, you know, I know they're for benefits, but if you give more details about it, would be great.
Sure. The scholarships are really based on education, and there are different ways in which people can pursue education. They can pursue education through the certification program, which we referenced earlier, the PHR, the SPHR, the GPHR. The monies can be used for taking classes at a local higher education institution. It can be used for attending the main HR convention, such as the one that's being held at the Samoset in May. So those are three opportunities that we offer through the scholarship program to our members.
You're the new president.
Yes.
So what is your one or two top priority this year, personally, to make a difference in the organization? And for somebody who maybe had been part of the organization and might think, is it the same as it's always been? What is a difference that you're planning to make?
It's
yes,
funny.
I'm putting you on the spot. Yeah. Yes, I am.
Well, and you know, that's the beauty of the way the presidency is set up. So for 2 years, you're a president-elect, and 2 years, you're president. And so during the course of those 2 years, I really got the chance to think about what my legacy would be and really the impact that I wanted to make. And one of those things is to make sure that our membership felt very inclusive. That would be for the current membership, any new members, and also to reach out to businesses as well, so that there are folks out there who are responsible for certain HR items that may not have been educated in HR. For example, you may have a small construction firm that the finance person is responsible for the HR. And that can be very difficult because, frankly, HR is a big enough job by itself. So what I want to do is make sure that our programming reflects an opportunity and really a benefit for those folks to come. So those two things, as well as grow our membership. You know, it, as I said, it's the lifeblood of the association. It's so important. And it really benefits everyone to have an even more diverse group.
What's the membership currently?
We are at about 250 members.
That's a good size group.
It is.
Largest chapter in Maine, I'm assuming.
It is.
Oh, that's
and
great.
It primarily, we draw from Brunswick all the way down to York.
Do you think that when somebody is really looking at getting in the leadership of the HRASM, let's say they've been part of the group and they've said to themselves, well, maybe I should think about the leadership part of it. What would be the benefit to being on the board? What would be the benefit of doing some of the community work that is done and leading in that role?
Well, I think it gives you a very good idea of HR itself by coming onto the board. You certainly learn the different aspects of governing a large association. You learn about budgeting. You have to be a really forward-thinking individual to develop those initiatives to grow the association. When I'm at a general meeting, I like to sit at different tables and have conversations with people and ask them about their interest in being part of the board. I think it's imperative that the board has new blood on it regularly because I think people can get stuck in a rut. So I encourage anyone and everyone to consider spending some time on the board and understanding the challenges, but also understanding the benefits of being part of that group.
I think you said it well. You know, it's funny that you know, we've been talking now for half hour on the HRASM, and that's not even your real job. I mean, this is just the volunteer job you do as president. I know you work here in Portland, and you're the COO for the Park Danforth, correct?
That's correct.
That's great. How's business over there?
It's great. You know, we are an organization that is looking to grow and expand, and of course, senior communities and the aging is a huge sector. So it's a very exciting time to be part of the organization.
No, that's great, and it does great work. Well, I want to thank you very much for being on the show today. You talked a lot about the Human Resource Association of Southern Maine and a lot about, you know, what really the benefits are of it. And good luck with your presidency over these 2 years.
Well, thank you so much for having me, David.
No, I appreciate it very much. You're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we will be right back.
Maine DOT has a special announcement for northbound drivers who routinely take I-295's Exit 15 in Yarmouth. Stop taking Exit 15. I repeat, stop taking Exit 15. It's not your exit anymore. It was your exit once, but not now. Forget about northbound Exit 15. Exit 15 is not for you. Actually, Maine DOT is adding a brand new on-ramp there, and to do that safely and quickly, closing Exit 15 is required starting March 12th. So if you're driving northbound on Interstate 295 and headed for Route 1 in Yarmouth, take Exit 10 in Falmouth or Exit 17. Temporary traffic signals will make taking those alternate exits safe and convenient. You can take Exit 15 southbound, but just forget all about Exit 15 northbound, at least until June. Sometime in June, you can take Exit 15 then. Take it all you want. Exit 15 will be yours once again. A message from Maine DOT. There's better road ahead. Drive safely.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com. And today we're talking with David Leiboff. He is the president of Expaticor Services. David, thanks for being on the show today.
My pleasure, Dave. How are you?
I'm doing very well. You know, it's interesting. We're talking a little bit about payroll today, but I'm assuming that Expaticor does something with expatriates, as your name implies?
Yes, actually, we do. Expaticor was originally formed about 10 years ago to support the market that deals with the transfer of employees around the world, known as expatriates. We were doing mostly what we refer to as the care and feeding, helping the employees of our clients move from country A to country B and make sure they're taken care of for things like housing and relocation and tax and such. And about 2 years in, we started in 2002, and about 2 years in, our clients began to ask us if we could do payroll services as well. Could we pay an employee who was moving from the United States to Mexico compliantly both in the U.S. and in Mexico? And the next thing you know, we were heavily into the international payroll business.
Well, you know, international travel, which, by the way, I'm actually on my way to Norway in the first week of June, which will be my actual first time over the pond, as they will say. So I can certainly understand the stress that some people sometimes go over, when you're going overseas, because there's a lot to learn. I can only imagine moving over there even gives you more stress. So what key services do your clients seem to demand, you know, from that aspect?
Okay, and again, kind of first splitting it into the human needs side, the employees who are moving are moving to solve a business need, right? To serve their company, and there are complexities associated with that. They're into a new country with different language, different culture. They're moving their family, and they're looking to have support that will allow them to transition to that. To that new location as smoothly as possible. So the types of support that employee needs is, what currency am I going to get paid in? How do I find a home? What kind of school curriculum is my child going to go into? Can you find a school that would sort of replicate the curriculum they would have had back here in the U.S. if it's a U.S. outbounder? Because if you think about it, if you go into the Norway school system, it may be first in a different language, most likely, and secondly, it will be potentially following a different curriculum. So these are the kinds of things that are concerning to the employee and his or her family when they move. We have the expertise to be able to take their hands and walk them through all of this as efficiently as possible, so the employee can keep his or her mind on the business need. With regard to payroll, that's a whole other sort of aside to this, which is very compliance-driven. When you're going to Norway, if you're going there for a long period of time, and Norway then requires that your compensation be reported to them, that has to happen in a way that is seamless to the employee, who would have no idea as to how to deal with the currency or the tax system. And there are policies that companies have and use in order to allow the employee to feel similar to the way that they were at home in terms of net income, and in turn allow the payroll operation, in essence, to report all of the things that are happening to that employee to the location's government that they're going to, so the tax system there, which the compensation there, David, may include housing, it may include cost of living benefits and other things, all have to be reported and taxed appropriately without creating a distraction to the employee or without having the employee feel a financial impact that they weren't expecting.
Well, I'm
and
sure
that's the magic that we perform.
I was going to say that's a very important role that I, you know, when I remember when companies moved me over the years and certainly didn't do any international moves, but did just domestic moves. And even when you're moving domestically, the amount of, you know, time, energy, ideas that need that I didn't never thought of that have to be fixed and checked and reported, and you know, you just don't think about a lot of these things. And you know, this is a very critical service that if a company is doing global you know, business, that they have to think about.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are services that support this population, which include cultural training. So if you're moving from the United States to Japan or even the United States to England, where you would think it would be similar and it's not, they teach you a little bit about how to get on in that culture, things to do and certainly things not to do that might be offensive to the local population. And language training, of course. You know, there's just all kinds of services that kind
sure.
of go along and support this population.
Well, you know, having talked about the move that somebody's made, and you're talking about the global payroll as the second part of the business, let me focus on that for a few moments here. You know, the global payroll is, I would think, a hot topic right now, having to do with there is a more global movement of people around the world. It's a global business now. Tell me about what HR people need to think about, or, you know, HR professionals, or even business leaders need to think about in terms of really dealing with this critical issue?
So, and I'd be happy to. I think the first thing that one should think about when they think about their international workforce, their global workforce with regard to payroll, is risk management. In other words, are we complying with all of the rules in the location? The second would be cost management. How can we efficiently compensate our employees, and not in terms of the net pay to them, but how do you set up an infrastructure if you have 5 people in country A and 17 people in country B and 300 in C? How do you set up a payroll administrative structure that can pay all of them compliantly and correctly without you know, overpaying for the service? And then the third thing that those employers should be thinking about would be customer satisfaction. If you are operating a payroll globally that is not paying people on time or not reporting to them, you and I would think about a pay slip. If that pay slip doesn't come and they just get a deposit in their account and they can't figure out what they got compensated, and this is especially true for the expatriate population that has to deal with multiple currencies and multiple countries, if they don't have that, they're frustrated and start to ask questions of the employer that sometimes even the you know, the program administrators are unable to answer if they're not running effectively. So it's the risk management, cost management, and the attention to customer satisfaction that are the key aspects of an effective global payroll program.
Well, you know, there are a lot of things you can do wrong as a company when it comes to your employees. Paying them incorrectly is just not one of them.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. So all of this at the end of the day, as we always say in the payroll business, you're only as good as your last transaction. You can't get it wrong.
That's right.
And you need the expertise, and especially for, you know, in this day and age, as you mentioned before, that the companies are going global. Markets at home, you know, dry up competitively very quickly. And they, you know, it's become easier and easier, more easy than ever before to go global, right? You've got to learn how to open up in a new location. But once you're there and you've got employees, you've got to learn how to pay them quickly, correctly, compliantly. It does create frustrations for organizations, you know, to be effective in their new countries if they can't get payroll right. And you'd be surprised how many times it doesn't go correctly for a period of time.
Well, you know, I'm just thinking to myself, you know, if with all the regulations, compliance, and rules in the U.S. That everybody is not compliant with, and all the rules and changes that constantly are happening, now throw in about two or three or four other countries. I mean, it's just, it can be a daunting thought, let alone executable.
Yeah, and when we start to think about those other locations, the first locations you or I would be thinking about would be sort of evolved, mature locations like Western Europe, Canada. But the reality is that business is global, and we work with organizations, for example, like drilling companies that are in locations in Africa, like Tanzania, Mauritania, Zambia, where it's you know, even more difficult to figure out exactly how those systems work and make sure that you're dealing with them not only effectively, meaning people are getting paid correctly, but compliantly. And there are a lot of regulatory pressures on organizations that are operating in the less evolved locations, like the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, which you know, sort of are making compliance more and more an important item on their international payroll agenda.
So when you're talking to organizations or companies and you're trying to provide them with information as to why they should use your service in this area, what are some of the key takeaways that they could say, yeah, this is why I should go with Expaticor?
Great question. And we are very familiar with well over 100 locations right now where we are either actively operating or are set up to operate, and in many of the locations that I was just speaking about, which not only are the, you know, kind of traditional locations that one would think of, but some of the more exotic ones. We focus on compliance. We focus on getting the service correctly. We focus on you know, keeping cost for the client managed. Not you can make tremendous mistakes in terms of magnitude with expatriates, double paying or paying in two currencies, and we manage all of that effectively for our clients. So these are very complex scenarios that our organization Expaticor simplifies and just takes on for our clients, and allows us to serve their employees effectively.
We're talking with David Leiboff. He is the president of Expaticor, and we're going to go to a quick break, and when we return, I'm going to be asking him to provide a great example of a success story that he can tell everybody about and maybe we can relate to. So you're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we will be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com. And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And we are talking with David Leiboff, and he is the president of Expaticor. And we've been talking for the last 20 minutes or so about international relocation and global payroll. And, you know, when we came right before we went on break, I said, you know, Dave, I'd love an example of a success story that you've had that people can say, oh, this is a great example and a reason why Expaticor would be a company that I should talk to. What's that example, Dave?
Great. Thanks, Dave. So a really good example of how we've used all of our services to support one of our clients really is a, I would give you the example of an organization we've worked with since 2006 called Laureate Education, Inc. Laureate is the largest for-profit provider of, it's the operator of universities in the world. And the organization has grown substantially, sort of astronomically over that period of time from a few hundred million dollars into a few billion dollar organization. Laureate had made a strategic decision back in 2006 that it did not want to provide expatriate program services internally. It thought that it would take too much time and attention sort of to develop a mature function that could support its expatriates. And they came to Expaticorps to do that outsourced service. As the world's largest operator of universities, and by the way, all of the universities that Laureate operates are outside of the United States, the business of the company was essentially to go out, source universities that it could potentially purchase and operate. And the people involved in that were very critical strategic folks who were very important to the company, and Expaticorps was able to assist Laureate by developing policies that made sense to facilitate the mobility of these individuals around the world, programs to help, again, with, as I mentioned before, with the care and feeding of that population and their families while they were on assignment, and to compliantly, correctly, accurately deliver pay to them in the countries that they were serving in. So where we had begun with Laureate on around 6 or 7 expatriates to begin with, their program now has around 40 to 50, and they are in more than a dozen countries around the world.
Yeah, that's a great example. I think that, you know, when I think about this, I think about companies could do this themselves, right? I mean, let's be honest, they could, but it would require a massive amount of somebody having knowledge of all these different countries, and the possibility of mistakes, you talk about risk management, is huge. And having an organization that focuses on this day in and day out, this is a great example of why an outsourcing works at times, and I think you're providing a great detail about that type of outsourced services.
Yeah, and that point is when we talk about risk management and we think in terms of compliance, that's sort of one way to think about it. Another really critical one is exactly what you've just mentioned. If the organization, and many do have internal departments created to serve their expats, if that organization loses a key person who either maybe leaves the organization or, you know, God forbid, they get promoted into a new role, and all that institutional knowledge sort of goes along with them, they are at risk for having these errors pop up very quickly within the operation of their program. By utilizing Expaticorps, we operate consistently through organizational change. And again, this is exactly why Laureate appreciates the partnership with us, because as they are continuing to acquire and acquire and acquire more organizations and try to integrate them, we just sort of keep on ticking and continue to operate this program for their very important people quite effectively.
No, absolutely. So let's talk a little about global payroll. I mean, we talked a little bit about it in the first segment, but I wanted to go into the second segment here and talk a little bit about the evolution of global payroll. I know that certainly when I think about payroll a few years ago, maybe even 10 years or 15 years ago, it has evolved dramatically over the last few years. So first of all, what do you see as the evolution for global payroll functions, and where do you see it going?
That's a great question. So what I would say is that over the past maybe 10 years, what has happened is organizations have sort of split into two types. They have decided to set up shared service centers within their own headquarters, typically, or in a in a third country, where that shared service center is going to operate many of the administrative functions for that organization. It might be finance, legal, accounting, and payroll very often is a piece of that. If they have decided to run into that, organize as a shared services platform, then they will have technology, ERPs like Oracle or PeopleSoft or SAP, that are gathering HR information, feeding that information to their local, potentially or usually internal payroll administration units in country. That local payroll administration unit is going to process payroll locally and send data back to that ERP for, you know, in the data repository there so that the company can report on it internally. That would be sort of a one model. Okay, that's an internal shared service model. Other organizations, which are not as centralized, want to outsource the either the program management of payroll, meaning, hey, we'll tell you the countries we want you to be in and operate payroll for us, or we will have a program management unit internally that will outsource some of the processing functions. And the difference there is one would be a full BPO outsourcing. They would go to a large Accenture or organizations like this and just say, hey, you handle our outsource, the administrative payroll function for us. And then there's sort of the halfway point, which is more where the program management still sits within the organization. So things like what types of technologies we want to use and whether we want to outsource the local processing or keep it internal would still sit within the organization. But for the actual processing of payroll itself, they will outsource to a company like Expaticor for those organizations or for those countries, I should say, that they have decided that they don't want to administer internally.
Sure. No, I think one of the things that's really interesting about this is, you know, there are companies out there that maybe are thinking about today expanding, because as we have spoken about, it's a global world now. And they may have said to themselves, gosh, I need to think about how I'm going to make this happen. And this is a great piece of information that they may not have thought of outsourcing. They may have said, well, we'll just have to learn all this, we'll have to do this. And it can be really cost-effective for an organization to do that and really think about how they can do what they do best and let, you know, a company help them in growing. I mean, that's really what you're doing.
Yeah, and that's right. And, you know, there's sort of a finite set of activities that have to be done in order to get up and running in a location. You know, you've got to decide what kind of entity you need. And once you've got that, you've got to register in the location. You've got to come up with roles that you want people to perform, you know, the jobs, and then put together employment agreements for them that are compliant in that location. You've got to figure out what benefits those people need, and then you've got to get payroll up and running. We can help clients do that, to your point, on an outsourced basis very, very efficiently and effectively so that they don't have to learn all of the pieces to that puzzle before they decide to take their first step into a new location.
Great. Well, you know, you can't do this yourself, can you? It takes the people under you. So tell me a little bit about, you know, these people who are employees, the directors, the VPs, the people who do this. It takes somebody who really has an incredible amount of knowledge to be able to run and deal with these type of challenges. So tell me about your company, about your employees.
Okay. So I've got a wonderful staff. We are close to 30 employees in the organization. And they are all passionate about international. It's been said, I've been in this career, in this business, over 30 years, and either people just absolutely are attracted to it or they run as quickly as they possibly can from it. And that has to do with the complexities and issues around language and learning things that are different that you've got to integrate into you know, how you process on a day-to-day basis. So the first thing is that our employees have passion for international as a business. They are not fearful of complexity and also of gray areas, right? So where in the U.S. side, if you think about payroll, there's rules that are, you know, pretty standardized, and the professionals who are wonderful in the U.S. domestic payroll business understand to a very, very deep, granular level how to process payroll in a variety of situations. We are operating payroll in over 100 countries around the world. How could you possibly really understand the or have the depth of knowledge about how to do all of that accurately in all of these locations? You have to be willing to figure out how to understand what you need to and manage the risk of doing that. And within the typical payroll personality, which is a very, you know, we want rules to follow so that we can process volumes as quickly and efficiently as possible, this is sort of the antithesis of that. There's a lot of gray area. You write the book on it. It's not already been written. And you've got to have people who are comfortable in that sort of environment in order to be effective. And we understand how to find them. And once they get in, they love doing it.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, this has been a topic that was very interesting and provided a lot of information for our guests here on the HR Power Hour. So I want to, again, David Leboff, I want to thank you very much for being on the show today. I appreciate all the information very much.
It's been my pleasure, Dave. I've really appreciated the time. And anybody who wants to contact us can go to our website at www.expaticor.com or send us an email to me directly, dleboff@expaticor.com.
And that's D-L-E-B-O-F-F at expaticor.com. Also, if somebody is interested, they can, of course, go to the HR Power Hour radio site, and they'll be able to find your information there. We will have that information there for them as well, and can also listen to any part of the show at that time. David, thank you very much for being on the show today. I appreciate your time.
You're very welcome, Dave. Have a great day.
And now your HR tip of the week. Are you hiring someone from across the globe? Know that the U.S. Customs and Border Protection Agency announced that it's going to be doing away with the familiar paper form I-94 and now going to an automated system. Form I-94 provides international visitors with evidence that they've been lawfully admitted into the U.S., which is necessary to verify alien registration, immigration status, and employment authorization. Effective April 26, 2013, this automated system will now be in place. So just know that the form is now automated and there will be no more paper cards used. That's your HR Tip of the Week. Next week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to be talking with Peter Fendler and Dan Tatu. They are the President and Vice President of Norton Financial Services. We're going to be talking about benefits. We're going to be talking about the fiduciary responsibility and obligations, as well as compliance for employers and employees. Also, we're going to be talking about the new things that are happening in the world of benefits. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 2 p.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 AM or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.